From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and thanks to everyone who has supported us through the years, the listeners, of course, and all the people who have taken the time to be guests on this program, and of course, our great underwriters of the program. If you'd like to be an underwriter of the Bishop's Hour, it's easy to do. Go to scd.org and click on the Bishop's Hour, and it'll explain it and give you contacts for Gabe and for me, and we can tell you how to help be an underwriter, and we certainly thank all those who have done that over the 21 years we've been on the air now here on the Bishop's Hour. Well, we're pleased to welcome in Paul Starkey from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Paul, good day to you.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
Doing well. Notre Dame won Saturday, right? So
we're doing great.
We're 1-0.
That first half kind of kept us a little nervous, didn't it?
Those Dukies, they were tough for 30 minutes.
They came to play.
They really came to play. And it was, you know, it was interesting. So much of the football we're seeing now, no fans at all. And Notre Dame pulled it off. They let in, you know, about a quarter of the stadium capacity, maybe 20%, I think. And everybody behaved and had a good time. And hopefully it was successful in terms of the pandemic and everything. And it was a little bit of normalcy in a very strange world we're in.
Yes. You know, whenever Notre Dame plays, that's a good day. But I have to tell you, looking at that stadium, you know, I've never seen that in my life. That stadium is always full and
packed.
It was just packed, you know, always. And to see that, it was surreal. Every time they cut away to the crowd, it was just like, I can't believe this. This is such an impact.
Like, gee, I thought they'd draw better than this. even touchdown Jesus was frowning a little bit, I think, especially in the first half.
Yeah, I think so. But I also think that this schedule, this was also weird that, you know, we saw ACC on the field.
I mean, on the field. Yeah,
they're part of this in history. This has never happened before.
Yeah,
and you know they made this decision to do this, and I'm glad they did. It's an interesting schedule because, you know, the big game is going to be with Clemson.
That's
going to be the one. And so, I think, you know, we take it a game at a time, like they always say, but pretty darn exciting. And I know that the Notre Dame Alumni Club here in Sacramento, they were online virtual having their tailgater.
Yeah, about it, they were. You know, I'll tell you, they are the only team in college football. They went 132 years without a single conference victory.
Wow.
and they finally got a conference victory. So
they're
on there. Now they're going to take a step back and play a non-conference game.
But yeah, you know, and it's just amazing to see the schedule and to see the challenges there. But I just think that it's, you know, they call them the Fighting Irish, and isn't that great? I mean, the resilience of that school to just, you know, in the midst of all this, to just step up and give it a shot.
So, yeah, and you know, the thing I really liked was, you know, at the end of the game, then they always, and because they have a contract with NBC, they actually show them singing the alma mater, the team standing there together. They weren't together this time. They were just socially distanced. But it was the first time I'd seen it. They put the words on the screen of the alma mater. And, I mean, I teared up. It was beautiful. A tribute to Our Lady, of course. And it was really beautiful.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, as Catholics, we couldn't get enough of that great advertising.
Fantastic. Absolutely, absolutely. Well,
so it was strange, but we'll go on to next week and through the season and see how it goes. And you know, it gives me a chance to get my mind off of, you know, some of the seriousness of where we are right now. But it's good to see. So I'm looking forward to more good games.
So, Paul, how is the St. Vincent de Paul and all the great work you folks do? You go out in twos. You go generally to where the person in need lives, and you meet with them on their territory, so to speak. You don't have an office, et cetera. How has it been affected by the pandemic?
Well, you know, I talked about this a little bit last time we got mm-hmm. together. And
right.
I'm just really pleased to say that we just came off of a national assembly, a national meeting of St. Vincent de Paul across the United States. And they did it virtually, of course. So from the comfort of my West Sacramento home, you know, I'm sitting there with all these other Vincentians across the country. It was amazing to hear the stories about how we are struggling with doing home visits in the Vincentian way. And what that means is the personal contact.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was in one breakout session with these folks, again, from all over the country and stuff, talking about this. And they were explaining that, you know, in the past, we wouldn't have focused on the telephone all that much. But now it's like, you know, we'll have a conference call and we'll get everybody on the phone and we'll be talking things and making that personal contact. Some of the conferences are actually meeting with their clients via Zoom or some other virtual platform. That's not something that we have our meetings virtually, our Vincentian meetings twice a month, but we at least in our little conference, Our Lady of Grace, we haven't had the Zoom meetings with the clients. But a lot more phone work, a lot more attention to when we do go out and do the home visits, it's done very safely. In the past, the two of us would go out together in the same car, sit next to each other, say a little prayer before we go out and everything. Now we do this virtually. We're each in our own car. And we drive out there, and I think I said last time, it's like a St. Vincent de Paul parade.
Uh-huh.
You've got these cars rolling down the street, and, you know, we find the people, and they oftentimes will be outside waiting for us, and we have masks and you know, everything you need to do it safely, and we do that. Another technique that we have been using, a lot of the homeless are being put up in hotels right now. And so, again, we will drive to the site, make a call ahead of time, let them know that we're going to come up. We leave the food at the door, and then go back to our car and then, you know, wait for them to open the door, and there can be waves and stuff like that. But it's tough because we're used to, you know, going into the homes and you know, shaking hands and saying hello and, you know, sometimes praying together, you know, holding hands and stuff.
Right.
So it's been tough. But one of the things that came out of this national meeting, this national assembly, and out of our own conference discussions is that the Holy Spirit works through a telephone.
Yeah.
It works through a computer screen. You can't keep the Holy Spirit out of that connection. And so it's gratifying. So it's, you know, we're doing the good work, just doing a little bit differently.
Has the demand for your services increased?
You know, it's a very interesting question. It dropped off amazingly at the very beginning of all this.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to see, and it's hit and miss. I cannot tell you what the pattern is. I can't tell you what's exactly causing it. But in our conference, the number of requests have gone up, and in other conferences. But then again, at the national meeting, talking about what our experience was across the country, everyone I talked to seemed to say, you know, it just sort of dropped off. And, you know, now it's hit and miss. But I will tell you, this is in Texas. It never dropped off.
Hmm.
I was having a conversation with some folks from Texas. And, you know, different state, different rules apply and everything.
Sure.
And they've been busy from the get-go, haven't stopped.
Wow.
So it's been a different experience across the country.
And the pandemic has been a different experience across the country, depending on what state you're in, what county you're in.
Yep. And that's, you know, that is part of the, you know, the challenge is, you know, who needs help? How do you reach them? How do they reach us? How do we get them the help? But like I said, we're working through it, and it's, you know, we're there doing that thing we have always done. You know, we are the ones, St. Vincent de Paul is the ones who go between the other service providers. When
mm-hmm.
when people are getting lost in the shuffle, St. Vincent de Paul seems to get there. We do that with our thrift store. We do that with all of our programs. Our prison ministry program is one that is an example of that. So it's the role that we play in. It's the role that St. Vincent de Paul had envisioned with his charity works hundreds of years ago, and and the work of Blessed Frederick, our founders, is to, you know, find people in need and help them to see the face of Christ.
And Frederick, he just had a birthday, didn't he?
No. The birthdays are in April.
Okay.
The September is our feast day month.
Okay.
So in April we celebrate the birthdays. Typically would have our big annual charity dinner. Didn't happen this year. And then we get to September and we have the feast days of Frederick on the 8th, St. Vincent de Paul on the 27th. And, you know, it's really funny. I call my walk the saints and the blesseds, or the blesseds and the saints. And it's because we, in the Vincentian family, we've got all these saints and these blesseds, and we don't even know who they all are. They're just, you know, when you have hundreds of years of charity, you know, these people show up. I'm not one of them, but there are many good ones in our company.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So, the walk for the poor.
And it's amazing. It is amazing. You know, we talk about the unexpected and the blessings. When this all started, I was ye of little faith, right? I was thinking, well, this year we're just going to have to put it on the back counter and you know, maybe we'll do it in, you know, 2021, 2022.
Right.
And the Holy Spirit again, these other people in the conferences were pushing me and saying, hey, are we going to do it? And I'm thinking, well, you know, I guess we could do it. I'm not sure what that looks like. So here's what it looks like. We have this national walk, again, a national event. St. Vincent de Paul's across the country are doing this. Different dates in September. In the case of our council, we're walking now. It's a virtual walk. So we basically will go out, do your walk, do it safely when you can. I mean, the smoke has been killing us. So, I mean, I don't think anyone's out walking. I hope they're not out walking in this stuff. But, you know, God willing, it's going to clear up and we'll have a chance to get out and get some fresh air again. But we're asking people to go online and to sign up as a walker. And so for the Sacramento Council already, we have more than 50 people who have signed up online, and they are walkers, and they are collecting funds, you know, for the charities that we do. The thing about this that's so exciting to me, and I didn't think it would take on like it has, but we have more walks this year, Bob, than I had last year.
You're kidding?
I'm not kidding. It's amazing. I've got walks: St. Mary's, St. Joseph in Vacaville, St. Vincent Ferrer in Vallejo, St. Dominic Benicia, Our Divine Savior in Chico, St. Joseph Lincoln, St. Catherine Drexel in Amador, St. Joseph in the Rio Vista, St. Joseph in Reading. You know, we've got St. Joseph's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
and those are separate walks throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Some of them are virtual. Some of them are a combination of actual, you know, safe social distancing, but also physical and distancing and virtual. Ours is in the Sacramento Council walk. That walk is involving right now Our Lady of Grace, St. Joseph Elk Grove, St. Mary Sacred Heart in Sacramento, Holy Spirit in Sacramento, Holy Family Citrus Heights. And then we have people that have joined the walk and are donating for beneficiaries. So there's a beneficiary for St. Lawrence and North Highlands. So this is the best ever. People know that there's a need out there. They're being responsive. And remember, we could not have our charity dinner this year. So while we had a good raffle, we were out about $100,000 for charity.
Wow.
This walk, God willing, and with the support of everybody who's listening to me, we're gonna meet that goal. We are already at a total of almost $15,000.
Whoa, boy!
And it's just the middle of the month. We just started. Some of the walks haven't even officially begun yet. So terribly exciting, because those dollars go directly to the conferences. They pay for the rent. They pay for the utilities. They help to pay for the food. The medicine, whatever need it is that we're trying to meet, that's where the resource comes from. It's also important because our traditional means of gathering funds, and I think some of your listeners know this, it's the Fifth Sunday collection. So many, many parishes will donate their Fifth Sunday collection. Mm-hmm. And that's always been kind of like the little lifesaver that comes in, you know, at the last minute and gives you, you know, $100, $200, $500, mm-hmm. you know, to get through the month, you know, for the needs and stuff. I know in our parish that tradition has continued virtually. People have the envelopes, they go online, or, you know, they use the envelopes, but they're still meeting the Fifth Sunday collection. It's not as big as it normally is, and so that's another area where the walk will help out. So, in short, it's to me, it's a minor miracle. I had no idea this would take off as much as it has, and it's fun. Just last Wednesday, I went out to Leatherby's, God bless them. They've given us these little fundraisers. The next one is September 23rd. You go there, you buy ice cream, and they give, and mention Vincent. You got to say the magic word.
Right,
they
right.
Say Vincent. Don't say Mary. Don't say, it's not Joseph, it's Vincent, you know. But that gets us, 20% for every, scoop of ice cream.
Wow.
And so I know last Wednesday we made a little money because I gained a little weight, had a fantastic black and tan, and just it was just great. And that's something else. If you're tired of COVID and you're tired of all of this, dreariness that we're going through, go get some ice cream, man. Yeah. That helps.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
It just puts it all in perspective.
Yeah.
So it's been going great, and the participation's wonderful. And it really could not be, there's a need there, and it couldn't be easier. You just go online, and if you know somebody that's walking, you can go to the website, and it's real simple. It's FOP Walk 2020, FOP, Friends of the Poor, FOP Walk 2020. And that goes to the national site. If you know the name of your walker, you can put that name in, and their name will come up. If you know the conference, if you know it's practically anything, it's so easy to donate. And so, and then the people that, say, I still hate the computer and I'm never going to donate on the computer, that's okay too, because we still accept checks.
Oh, good.
I joke about it because, in fact, two of our walks are not online. St. Joseph Rio Vista and St. Joseph Lincoln are not online, so you donate directly to them. So you can send them a check and say, hey, this is for the walk, and everything is fine.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Yeah, very easy. And if anyone's interested in getting the information in the background, they can just type in St. Vincent de Paul, Sacramento, and, Google that. It'll take you to our website. It always shows up now, St. Vincent de Paul, Sacramento. And you can read about, the background of it, who's participating. There are links to the different conferences, so that's another way to donate. You can just go to our website and click on the walk page, and you can donate from there. So we've made it as easy as we could for you, Bob. We could not have made it easier.
I'm looking for my checkbook right now.
Excellent.
Hey, Paul, always a pleasure. Look forward to talking to you again real soon, hopefully in person.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that.
We'll be rooting for the Irish on Saturday against South Florida.
Absolutely. Go Irish.
Go Irish.
Go St. Vincent de Paul.
Go St. Vincent de Paul. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah,
bye.
God bless. That's Paul Starkey from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Well, we are pleased and thrilled to have Lincoln Snyder, our superintendent of schools for our great Catholic schools, on with us today, and some great news out there. Lincoln, good day.
It is a good day. How are you doing, Bob?
Doing very well. That's it's wonderful. So give us an update, the update we've been waiting for.
It is. So today is our first day back for 16 of our schools in Sacramento County.
Wow. That is just great news. You went through the waiver process, and was that difficult? Was it obviously you got to cross every T and dot every I?
Absolutely. was it difficult? I mean, it was intricate. The state and the county had expectations of us that we would meet all of their protocols for guaranteeing maximum safety for students, which we're, totally in favor of. And so we simply were in negotiation or a conversation with the county health office since June, and it culminated in our kids being back today.
So was there, what was the biggest hurdle?
So the biggest hurdle was making sure that we had thought out every detail of the school day from the beginning of the day when the child wakes up at home to the end of the day when the child goes home.
Mm-hmm.
And the county really wanted us to use this document, our waiver document, to tell the story of everything we're doing every step of the way to make sure we thought through every detail. I mean, I think part of the thing that I stress with parents is that, there's risk for COVID everywhere right now, and
right.
You can't eliminate that risk. But the goal is to make sure that schools are the strong link in the chain.
Mm-hmm.
Really, that when a child comes to school, they're in a highly structured environment where we've thought through every detail, and it's going to be the safest environment they're going to find themselves in all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the county really pushed us to make sure we had thought of everything, but in a very collaborative way. And it, like I said, it was a lot of back and forth, but with the child in mind. And so we welcomed it, and very proud that today we got there.
Wow. So it's not exactly the NBA bubble, but it's honestly the same idea that we need you to be as safe as possible.
Yeah, exactly. When we started this process back in March, so I was working with an epidemiologist, and she said, you have to think of two things, which is hygiene and cohorts.
Mm-hmm.
And really that principle has held true through all of this. I mean, so even back in March when this first got going, the experts knew that there's in a pandemic, you keep people in cohorts, and so they're in their, like you said, their bubble. So that's your group, and if you're limiting contact within your group, you can limit the spread to other groups.
Mm-hmm.
So the cohorts are really important to us. And then the other thing is hygiene. So we're teaching our kids really to make sure they've got their masks, they've got their hand washing, and their hand sanitizers, and they're cleaning their desks, and they're keeping their distance from other people. And so those two things together, that people within the group are being really rigorous about hygiene, but then you don't have contact from group to group, is what's going to let us operate schools during COVID.
So how big is a cohort?
A cohort for us is a class. So our schools are organized K through 8 or TK through 8. And so we could apply for waivers for grades up to 6th grade.
Right.
And so a cohort for us is the grade. A couple of our schools, we had really big classes and smaller spaces, and so we split the grades, 5th grade, 6th grade, would, go into a couple of different classrooms. But, for the most part, our schools, our Catholic schools, were built back in the 50s, and so, those listeners who were in Catholic school in the 50s and 60s, it wasn't uncommon to have 60 kids in a classroom.
Yeah, right.
And with the desks screwed to the floor in rows. And so when we took all of the stuff, the bookcases and the carpets and the couches and the extra teacher's desks and stations, we took all that and spread the desks out. A lot of our classrooms have a lot of room because they were built for 60 kids to begin with.
Mm-hmm,
and so,
right.
So we were able to get to this place where the kids are distance as much as possible, and they're in their group. And we just, when we worked with the county, said, okay, well, here's the group, and here's the protocol, and here's how they're doing lunch, and here's they're doing. So they came back with us really, thoughtful advice. Okay, so what's your mask policy really? How do you make sure the kids are doing a temperature check at home? Are you really, are you doing the temperature check when they get out of the car or when they come to the class? And so a really high level of detail. But I think all of it was to make sure that we're doing the most possible, to make sure we're thinking of every single possible link in the chain where something could go wrong, and then anticipate it and avoid it.
The other thing I remember about those Catholic schools with the big classrooms in the 50s and 60s, there was always a woman at the front of the classroom named Sister.
Well, I think we're the spiritual heirs. If we're not all religious, of course, we're carrying the same mission. And so
exactly.
We don't have the 17-foot-long rulers and things that kids would remember from back in the day. But, it's funny that the stereotypical image of the Catholic school is kids in perfect rows and a sister with a 4-foot-long
right.
ruler maintaining discipline. of course, that's not how it works. You know, we've embraced modern practice, and our kids were doing group work and stations and all this great collaborative stuff, which is really good, but it's not good during COVID. And so in many ways, if you rock, you know, today we did a story with the Sacramento Bee, and if your listeners look at the pictures, they'll see, you know, we've got kids in desks and rows and spaced and distanced. And but I mean, in the, I've thought about this a lot. Back in the 50s, of course, we still had polio. We still had all these things. And so, you know, maybe things were that way because just intuitively, it's what had to happen to keep kids distanced and safe even then. I mean, the classrooms were sterile and clean and hygienic and spaced and orderly. And, you know, I mean, intuitively, maybe it wasn't a conscious thing as much, but, you know, people organized that way because it's what was best for the kids in terms of their health.
Yeah.
And we're doing the same thing.
Yeah, well, you know, you go back to the 1918 and the flu, the big, terrible flu back then, and you see... You see pictures, and they're wearing face masks, and they're socially distancing, and there are a lot of the same. They closed all the bars and restaurants, and it was very, very similar response a little over 100 years ago. But so with the county, were there things? Not really negotiation, but like you say about masks. How do you guarantee? Did they have ideas that about how to go about, like, making sure kids wear masks? In other words, were they able to provide guidance?
They did. You know, one of the great things about Dr. Casirier, our county health officer mm-hmm. in Sacramento, and so shout out to the county health office. They were reading the same studies we are, and mm-hmm. so, you know, a lot of listeners might think, you know, well, they've got a special source or special data, or, you know,
right.
better than the other. But you know, the truth is, when you read about, like, the studies from Germany or the studies from Korea, or, you know, they were looking at the same data points we were. And so, you know, for me, just reading the news and staying up with COVID because it's my job, I had a great back and forth with the county health office. Okay, well, you know, there was one big study out of Korea where they showed that really, you know, kids 12 and under were pretty safe to be back at school. And so I was able to say, well, Dr. Casirier, this study, and she said, yes, I've read it. I accept it. I think it's good science, and we're going to be basing our recommendations on that. So, I mean, they were very, and all of our county health offices, and so I have to work with 11 of them because we have schools in 11 counties, and they're like the rest of us. They're getting the data back. They're trying to understand it as scientists, and it's a conversation about, okay, well, this worked, and maybe this doesn't, or we need more data on that point. And so, you know, I know a lot of people are itching for an answer, but, you know, COVID is a new thing for us. It's a novel virus. They haven't been here before. We haven't. And so, honestly, a lot of it was just that open scientific conversation about, okay, did you see the study out of Germany? Or, mm-hmm. hey, I think Sweden hit herd immunity. Why did that happen? So, you know, it was a very honest conversation with Dr. Casirier and her team here in Sacramento about those kinds of things.
Yeah, and things have evolved even since March, 6 months ago, you know, just in terms of our understanding of COVID, which still is nowhere near perfect, but it's probably a lot better than it was back in February and March. So why not 7th and 8th grade? What's the reasoning?
So the younger kids are not, and this is the word of the health officers, they're not efficient transmitters.
Mm-hmm.
So the younger the child is, the less likely they are to give it to another child or to an adult. So most younger kids have gotten it from an adult in their life.
Mm-hmm.
But they're less likely to pass it off. But we know that by the time a child is 16, 17, 18, they're transmitting COVID more like an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And so... you know, Dr. Casirier and the other health officers said, okay, so kids under 10 or 12 really are much less risky than a child that's already 16, 17, 18.
Right.
Now, for example, Butte County, I mean, we've got a very high rate in Butte County, and, you know, God bless them not casting stones in a glass house, but, you know, a lot of the outbreaks have been at Chico State, which, you know, are
right.
college students, and
right.
they transmit just like adults by the time they're 18.
Yep.
But, you know, for younger kids, it's less risky of child-to-child transmission and child-to-adult transmission. So it's therefore safer to be back in school, and that's what we're doing.
So at the high school level, there's not even a waiver process at this point?
There's not. So yeah. schools and high schools.
Mm-hmm.
For certain groups that have a really objective reason to be back in school, so they're special ed students or students who don't have tech at home or homeless kids, we as educators were advocating with the state that, look, it's we know there's risk for any child at school as a teenager, as a high schooler, to maybe catch or transmit COVID, but, homeless children, for example, there's got to be a safe place for them to go.
Right.
And the health officer said that, there's just a huge risk for these vulnerable populations if they're not in a structured environment. We mm-hmm. have to have a rule for that. And so the state has one now. So if we, for us, serving these kids that need the extra support, we have a way to do that too.
Now, there are some areas still where we presumably have applied for waivers and they've not been granted yet.
We're getting very close. So mm-hmm. Yolo County, we're going to get them this week, I think.
And that's three schools there in Yolo County?
Exactly. So we're working on that. Solano County, they've been a little bit distracted by fires. And then our health officers, and for your listeners wondering what a health office does, I mean, when a county burns down like Butte and Solano did this year, I mean, it ties them up on so many things.
Yeah.
And so, of course, we know that our parents want to be back at school, and we want to be back at school, but calling the health officers in Solano or Butte, they're like, buddy, I understand, but I'm kind of busy with the county burning down. Can we talk about this?
Right.
So, we're very understanding that, there's broader concerns than just COVID. They still have the rest of the world, which has not stopped, and we understand that.
So air quality index, does that affect whether or not kids come to school?
It does. So we actually have a policy in the diocese that 150 and below kids go to school and do their normal activities. 150 to 200, we will operate school but keep the kids indoors. And above 200, we have our at our discretion, we can cancel school.
Uh-huh.
Of course, with things being 350 and 400 and 500 like they have been in Butte, I mean, one starts thinking, oh, my goodness, when is this going to end? And we've had an air quality index event in Butte County three of the last 4 years.
Yeah.
So, we understand that California has a lot of environmental challenges right now, but generally for our kids and for our schools, when it's high, we have them at school, we keep them indoors. Subjectively, if it's raining ash, we'll send them home. We know, again, this is a really tough time for everybody, and it was kind of insult to injury to have these fires right now, but it is what it is, and we're working through it.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, Butte County is, wow. The numbers up there, it's just been stunning, and good for all of them for hanging in there. It's been really, really tough. Well, Lincoln, I know you've got a lot of people pulling at you, and we'll pray for those openings in Yolo County, and hopefully this will all go away, and we'll have everybody back in school.
Absolutely, and I just wanted to affirm for the listeners. I mean, our teachers are amazing.
Yep.
I mean, their faith in the face of all of this, and understanding that there is a God that loves them and loves kids and calls them service on behalf of the kids, and that his will is being done right now. I mean, I can't tell you how inspiring my team is right now. I just, there is a God. He loves us, and these challenges, I think, are just there to remind us that there is a bigger purpose in life, and we just feel, despite everything, very blessed. I feel very blessed to work with the educators I work with.
Yeah, every time I talk to anybody in your staff and any of your educators, I'm inspired. They're a great, great group of people. And that guy, God, being in charge of the whole thing, that's pretty special.
His will be done.
His will be done. Thanks, Lincoln, so much.
Thanks, Bob. God bless.
Yeah, God bless you, too. God bless all your faculty and students, et cetera. We'll take a quick break here. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour on this great day. That's great news right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Hi, this is Laura Lynn, Assistant Director for Lay Formation, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Laura Lynn, and thanks for all the great work you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. It's much appreciated. Well, we're pleased to welcome in Jacqueline Aguiar, who is the Respect Life Coordinator for the Diocese of Sacramento. Jacqueline, good day to you.
Hello, good day, Bob.
Jacqueline, you have an office right across the hallway, and we haven't seen you, as this is painful.
I know. With all the changes,
we don't see anybody.
I definitely miss going to the office.
Yeah, well, it's temporary. as far as we know, we've been saying that for a few months now, but it's sure good to hear your voice.
Likewise, Bob, likewise.
And
pleasure.
The Respect Life work goes on.
It sure does. Continue on in spreading the gospel of life.
And you just had a big conference over the weekend.
Yes, we did. We just had our annual Respect Life gathering this past Saturday. It was our first virtual gathering.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite interesting. And it went really well. And like I said, it was our first ever virtual gathering.
Well, in some ways, got more people there who, you know, for one reason or another, couldn't have made it if it was, you know, live in just one place.
Right. Yeah, that makes it easier than to have to travel, right?
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Definitely folks from like Tahoe. Mm-hmm.
So the bishops have, Bishop Soto, of course, has promulgated the Diocesan Pro-Life Plan in the last couple of weeks, a wonderful four-part plan, all on the anniversary, really, of the 25th anniversary of Evangelium Vitae.
Yes.
The
yes.
Gospel of Life, yeah.
The Gospel of Life, that's right. That's main focus. During the gathering, Bishop Soto was able to go through the four parts of the four-part plan,
mm-hmm.
which is also to be viewed on our website just by going to scd.org/respectlife, and you can see there of all the amazing ways we can continue to promote the gospel of life during this year and continue on.
Well, the four parts, education and formation, pastoral care, prayer and worship, and advocacy.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so much within each one of those. There's a lot on your plate right now, isn't there?
Yes, there's a lot. And also, the good thing, too, is that we are really focusing on collaborating with the different departments. So not only is it Respect Life, but also intertwined with social concerns, right?
Mm-hmm.
The social concerns issue, also with want to involve the youth as well. So the youth and young adult ministry is also involved. So it's all working together.
Tell us about Walking with Moms in Need.
So Walking with Moms in Need is a nationwide effort that has been presented by the USCCB, so the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Mm-hmm.
The Committee of Pro-Life Activities presented this initiative. So it launched and passed this past March 25th, which is lands on the anniversary, right, of the Evangelium Vitae encyclical from Saint Paul, and Saint John Paul II. So he wrote this encyclical 25 years ago, and it really pushes and motivates us as Catholics to really promote the culture of life, and in our families, in our church, in our diocese. So with that, the initiative is walking along mothers, walking with mothers, encouraging them to choose life. If they're experiencing a difficult pregnancy and they go to their local church, parish, we should be able to respond with them with love, compassion, understanding, and knowing where to refer them for help, knowing where our nearest pregnancy resource center is at. If she's in need of prayer, if she's in need of material things as well. So there's numerous things that we can do to help her along her journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just so much. And then, of course, and it's going to be different this year, 40 Days for Life starts in September.
Yes, 40 Days for Life begins September 23rd. So it's just around the corner. So we have, the awesome thing is there's multiple parishes or committees, right, involved with 40 Days for Life. So it's nice to refer to our website where we list all the different prayer sites that you can organize your Respect Life committee or the Knights of Columbus or anyone from your parish who wants to do a silent prayer, a visual at outside abortion clinics, you can find in your nearest location. So we hope to have, the mission is to always have a group outside of the abortion clinic praying. That's another a way to witness, right, and to also save a life. Because when you're out there, it really makes a difference. And a mom can, even just by having a sign that says, you know, this is not too late, can change your mind, or we're here to help. Having a sign that says, like, the Gabriel Project, which is also goes along with the Walking with Moms in Need initiative. So the Gabriel Project is also a wonderful ministry that does just that. Walking with moms, pregnant moms, new moms who need that emotional and spiritual support for their baby, and so that's another way too.
Yeah, talk a little bit about the Gabriel Ministry. A beautiful article in the Catholic Herald, both on Walking with Moms in Need and on the Gabriel Ministry, and a wonderful couple in Roseville who were so involved in it.
Yes, that's right. So Mike Longo and Anne have been really, really taking the lead in promoting the Gable Project. And now, you know, with us as well as the diocese, we want to also promote and help them expand the Gable Project. It's a parish-based ministry. So it's amazing when parishes really adopt the Gable Project. Again, like I said, they walk along with moms. So they call the number. There's a toll-free number they call. That's how they get connected with the Gable Project. And then what they call the Gable Angel, mm-hmm. they actually go and meet with the mom in person and do an assessment to see what needs there are and really walk with them and encourage them to seek the resources they need. So it's really much an accompaniment with the mom as she journeys, as she's throughout her pregnancy, and also after her pregnancy, too. So they help with housing as well, referring to housing, and throwing baby showers as well. That's very helpful and very appreciative from the families. So there's many ways to help a mom in need. And knowing that she's not alone, right? Sometimes the fear of like, oh, I can't do, I'm afraid. Like the fear gives into the way of choosing life. But when they see a church community coming together to really encourage and just love on her, she feels that acceptance and that's what it. You know, that just it clicks. Like, oh, I'm not alone. I can have that trust with this, or either the Gable Angel or the Respect Life leader, or it can be someone that really just brings that love of Christ to them, just makes a big difference.
Yeah, and you know, it's amazing. All the studies you read from a variety of different sources, not even from pro-life sources, about why people choose to have an abortion. The number one thing is always they feel so alone in the decision. They feel like they didn't have any support. They didn't have any, you know, encouragement or anybody to turn to. And that in many cases, just having that support, having that backing, having that encouragement has resulted in them not having an abortion.
Exactly. By making that courageous, choice of this is my baby, you know, I am going to protect my child, and I have a support network to be with me throughout
right.
the ups and downs, and it's just, yeah, it's just amazing.
Yeah, I've heard
to see that transformation.
You hear it all the time. People say, oh, you just care about the baby in the womb. You don't care about once it's born, and that's just not true. Every pro-lifer I've met has been very concerned about the mom and the baby after the baby's born.
That's right. We care for both. And that's right. We continue that relationship with them after the baby's born as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Jacqueline, of course, October is pro-life month.
Yes, October is Respect Life Month. That's right.
Yeah.
So the theme for this year is live the gospel of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. So we're looking forward to the October Respect Life Month. And Bishop has also sent out a letter to all clergy and priests to please preach on the gospel of life. September 27th, just, you know, the Sunday before October begins. So he recommends that clergy preach about the gospel of life.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, Jacqueline, it's always good to talk with you. And thanks for all the great work you're doing. I know it is so appreciated by so many people and probably by a lot of people you don't even know yet, you know, but your work is having a profound effect here in the Diocese of Sacramento.
Well, praise and glory to God. I also want to mention we have our memorial a Mass as well for the unborn, and it's October the 13th. It's going to be at St. Mary's Cemetery this year, October 13th at 8 a.m., so mark your calendars too. It's going to be, obviously, it's going to be virtual. It's going to be live streamed, but you can definitely all invited to join us on October 13th.
October 13th, which is a big day for Our Lady of Fatima. That was the date of the final apparition. So, well, Jacqueline, again, always a pleasure to talk with you, and thanks for all you do, and God bless your ministry and you and your family, and we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon.
Yes, and I encourage everyone to go to our website, scd.org/respectlife, and you can view all the coming events. You know, another thing, focus on theology of the body. So it's another great topic to talk about, to learn more about for our youth and young adults.
Very good.
Thank you so much, Bob, for having me. God bless you.
God bless you, too. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jacqueline. That's Jacqueline Aguiar, who is the Respect Life Coordinator for the Diocese of Sacramento. Right here in she office in the Pastoral Center, like so many people do, and so many of them, having to work virtually these days. Well, Ministry Days is just around the corner now. This is from Jennifer Campbell, the director of Trinity Pines Catholic Center in Camp Pendola, also working hard on Ministry Days. The Offices of Family and Faith Formation and Youth and Young Adult Ministry would like to encourage you, your ministry leaders, staff members, and everybody to gather online for Ministry Days 2020. Rejoice and be glad that this is the part on Friday the 25th. On Friday, they're changing the schedule from years past for a virtual format that will allow your staff and ministry leaders to dive deeper into the topics. We've invited Dr. Bob McCarty to speak on Friday morning. He'll be sharing about the changing territory of ministry and encourage you into using a new ministry map as we reach out to young people and invite them into the life of the church. And in the afternoon, Jason Javier Watson, Ph.D., and Ernest Uwazi, Ph.D., will discuss the sin of racism and how to have the critical and difficult conversations around race in our parish ministry settings. We are asking you to sign up as a team for Friday, September 25th. The schedule will be from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Then Ministry Days on Saturday, September 26th. And certainly everybody in the diocese is invited. Some great speakers, some great workshops, and it will be online as well. And the bonus this year is that you can hear the keynotes and also participate in three workshops on the day of. But then, because they will all be put up online, you can view all the workshops at your leisure throughout the coming days. So it's a real bonus this year, Ministry Days 2020. The keynote in Spanish will be Dr. Felix Palazzi. And the keynote in English will be Dr. Edward Shree. So to register, you go to ministrydays.com, ministrydays.com. The bishops of the state of California, acting through the California Catholic Conference, have advocated a no vote on Proposition 14. There are 12 propositions on the California ballot. These are California state propositions dealing strictly with the state of California and the Constitution of the state of California. The measure would provide an additional $5.5 billion for the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine, known as the CIRM, which supports research on discarded human embryos from in vitro fertilization treatments, among other projects. The primary objection to Proposition 14 is based on moral and ethical grounds. The Catholic Church appreciates and encourages the progress of the biomedical sciences, which open up unprecedented therapeutic prospects. Those are the words of Pope Benedict XVI during an address on January 31 of 2008. At the same time, it affirms that true service to humanity begins with respect for each and every human life. Direct attacks on innocent human life are always gravely wrong. Yet some researchers, ethicists, and policymakers claim that we may directly kill innocent embryonic human beings as if they were mere objects of research, and even that we should make taxpayers complicit in such killing through the use of public funds. The bishops are also considering positions on other propositions. Go to cacatholic.org to learn all about it and to read all about all the propositions on the California ballot on November the 3rd. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Well, here I am in a river of questions. Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, it's valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I questioned my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain, my race, my religion, my country, my mind. But the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. You really love me like you say you do. So hold. question significance, meaning, and relevance. Does the work I'm doing really matter at all? Well, I question my friendships.